Hey, this is Porn Stash Peter Schwanz, and you're listening to Grapple Talk. Anyone who listens to this gets a free mustache ride.
Well, hey, welcome into Grapple Talk. My name is Nick Ragner, joined by AC Riley and Jesse Von Ruden. This is a show where we like to talk about Midwestern independent wrestling every single week. Me, personally, been in the wrestling business for how long has it been, guys? Like 7 years, maybe?
Oh, we've been all together for roughly about
seven years. I've commentated. I've done backstage announcing. I've even gotten in the ring a few times. Went to school for broadcasting, too, so this is kind of right up my alley. And I know you guys have quite a bit of experience in the biz, too.
Yeah, I mean, been doing pro wrestling primarily. Also in the communication field. Broadcasting is a minor, not a major. But other than that, starting to play my hand in commentary a little bit, doing a little bit of stuff, trying to keep it fresh.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that didn't sound fresh at all. I've started on a production side instead of actually in the ring. Doing a lot of commentary, video editing, videography, doing hype packs, making DVDs for companies, a lot of social media work, a little bit creative here and there. You know, whatever I get a chance to actually throw in my two cents, I love to do that. That's the cool thing about independent wrestling is it's one of those things where you can bat around ideas. You can help change storylines for the better. And that's what we're all about here is actually to promote professional wrestling, especially on the indie scene in the Midwest, and hopefully educate and inform.
Exactly. So stick around. We got a great episode of Gravel Talk coming up next.
Heading on a wrestling road trip.
Yeah, don't sleep on road trips with the bruises. You either end up without an eyebrow or you got something drawn on your face.
Well, download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar.
Independent wrestling is pretty damn fucking cool.
We're sitting down in the spotlight and squared circle with Rhino.
We're trying to bring more awareness to the independent professional wrestling scene.
Undoubtedly thankful for anybody that just decided to tune in and actually liked us enough to keep listening.
Welcome, ladies and gents, episode number 74, Grapple Talk. My name is Nick Ragner, joined by AC Riley and Jesse Von Ruden. Guys, pretty big episode coming on. We have multiple, not only pro wrestlers, but we also got Mike Mercury himself coming on, talking about their experiences with WWE. You're not going to want to miss this. It's definitely one of a kind of an episode, and if you're ever looking to make it big in the biz, or if you're just curious of how to make it to that level, we got you covered here for episode number 70. But before we get there, guys, first off, is there anything you'd like to say before I just continue talking? Anyone want to say?
No. It's I'm glad we actually made it to episode number 70.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool, man. Do we got a new intro this time?
I don't know. We haven't heard it yet.
Man, so. It'd be kind of cool if it came out to Bad Street, Atlanta, GA. A little bit of Freebirds bullshit. Come out, we're kind of like the Freebirds.
We're not going to do that now that you just said that.
Oh, great.
So.
Great, I was going to call you, Terry Gordy. But now you're not Terry Gordy.
Now who am I?
No, you're no one.
I'm no one?
You're AC Riley now.
Wow. Who is he then?
You are AC Riley now. I'm still me, and he's...
Melissa Banty. Isis?
Yeah.
You're a backstage correspondent.
Yeah.
And I'm AC Riley.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I think you need to start talking about upcoming shows.
Here are some featured shows appearing in the Midwest region.
So, all right, we're going to start things off Friday night, April 17th. It's ACW number 7, presented by Evil Royd Slade. Of course, it's at the Oshkosh Masonic Center, 204 Washington Avenue in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. The heavyweight title is on the line as Nick Colucci defends against insane Chase McCoy. This should be a good match. Both guys similar in size, similar in style.
Yes.
Not similar in attitude, though.
Yes.
It's going to be a good one.
I know.
The ACW tag team titles will be on the line as the Dream Police defends against AC Riley's favorite tag team, the Gusspire. And, of course, a match that's already been labeled as a match of the year candidate as Sadist takes on Joey Avalon.
That'll be a good one.
There's going to be a scrambler qualifier as Pornstash Peter Swans, Jared Jacks, Gorgeous Jordy Lee, Ruthless Michael Wayne, and Stacy Shadows with the Roadhouse be vying. Well, what they're vying for, we'll find out at some point in time. And, of course, AC Riley's in action against Adam Grace. All right. There's still plenty of reserved general admission tickets for only $10. You can go to the House of Heroes in Oshkosh, contact any of the talent in AC roster, or message ACW directly and reserve yours today. Of course, doors open at 6:30. Bell time is at 7 p.m.
If you're in the area, this is a show you don't want to miss because last time we were there, it was just hopping. It's one of those wrestling events where it's just like, man, this is really cool. This
well, definitely, it's super hot right now in the town of Oshkosh. Every time we've been there, it's been a sellout. They've actually added what I heard was bleacher seats this time around. So you
really
want to make sure you get there. If you want a floor seat, if you want a bleacher seat, you can get that as well. Plus, there's always other good goodies there as well. I'm Dustin Tape TV. Dave Guy will be there. We'll be there.
DJ Bob had, like, a shit ton of action figures last
always,
time.
Always, yeah. That's always great for the kids. You know, like, $5, throw it down, get a couple of action figures. Kids will be delighted for the rest of the week.
There you go.
Absolutely. Revolution Championship Wrestling also has a show this Friday, the Revolution Rumble. That's at the Battelle Center, 904 North Main Street in Mishawaka, Indiana. Main event will be a 20-man Revolution Rumble. 20 men will enter. Only one can survive to earn a RCW heavyweight title match on May 15th, their next show. Also, a women's match is AK-47. Allison Kay takes on the Punk Rock Ragdoll, Heidi Lovelace. And, of course, Heidi.
Great match.
Yeah, absolutely. Great match. And, of course, Heidi Lovelace along with Hudson Evie over at Japan recently. So, I mean, coming back from that, you know, same deal as Melanie Cruz. You know, you come back with all the more knowledge from Japan. Over to a singles match, back to the boys, as Brian Defiance takes on the end of the world, Jake Omen. Also in tag team action, the New School, which is Kevin Storm and Noah Walker, current champions, take on Team Ground and Pound, which is consisting of Rick Vidal and Steve Sterling. And also a triple threat tag team match, number one contenderships for the titles, as we'll see Legendary, which consists of Alexander S. Kirk and Matt O'Hare. They'll be taking on the police department, Officer Rod Streep and Deputy Dave. Yeah. And then Overton Travers and Roger Lanier. And so a triple threat match for the number contendership. It'll be a great matchup between those six talents. Doors will open at 6:30. The action starts at 7. Tickets for this event is $10 for adults, 5 for kids, 5 through 12. Kids 4 and under are free at Revolution Championship Wrestling's Revolution Rumble this Friday in Indiana.
We also have Gally, Las Nueves Estrellas de Lucha Libre. That's tough to say, man. Las Nueves Estrellas de Lucha Libre.
Well, you do such a good job with it, though.
Sunday, April 19th, Bacho. It's that Bacho gimmick, man.
Yep.
Sunday, April 19th at the Gally Arena, 270 West North Ave, Suite 21 in Villa Park, Illinois. What you're going to be seeing, the Campeonato Junior, Barry Wright, the champ, taking on D'Angelo Steele. Also going to see Punisher 747, Lamar Titan, and Marsh Rocket taking on La Maldición. I pronounced this wrong last time. Is it Dracones?
I think it's Draconis.
Draconis, Overload, and Voodoo Americano
Overload.
Mojo McQueen. That's going to be a great match in itself. You're also going to see GPA taking on Mike the Mexicutioner Anthony. What a great name that is, especially for
Pretty
that
good.
Company. Destructor Jr. and Golden Star will be taking on Gringo Loco and Traitor. We'll also see Furia Roja and Rey Furia taking on Matt, Nix, and Castro. Just tons of tag team action here. Obviously, you know, building off that Lucha name. Golden Dragon and Mason Conrad will also be in tag team match and taking on El Bayo and La Bestia, Steve Fierce, and Rob Matter. Admission is $10 for adults, 5 for kids, 12 and under, and the show starts at 5:30 for Gally's Las Nueves Estrellas de Lucha Libre.
And of course, that's only 3 matches that we covered, and of course there's
three
shows coming up this weekend that we highlighted. There's a ton more coming up this weekend. For example, Fuel Pro Wrestling is also this Saturday in Illinois. That's actually going to be our upcoming guest, GQ. That will be his last appearance for a while before he goes under the knife and gets his shoulder taken care of.
Yerks
indeed.
Yerkin Durkin.
All right, cool. So a lot of cool things happening on the national scene. Heard the Briscoe Bus Brothers. Pardon me, I said the Briscoe Busters for a second.
Briscoe,
I don't know why.
Sounds like a finisher for
but
them.
But the Briscoe Brothers have re-signed with Ring of Honor. Here it's a 2-year deal. Good for them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Keeping it indie, obviously. We'll be talking to Matt Winchester come up here in a sec about really what ROH is all about. He says it's, you know, the best wrestling on TV right now. So, I mean, maybe a good choice by them just sticking it with their roots and, you know.
Absolutely.
Staying in it for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, of course, and, you know, the hot rumor was that a lot of Ring of Honor guys were going to go over to WWE. You know, we saw that with Jimmy Jacobs, and we thought that was going to happen with Briscoe Brothers. And now, you know, they pulled a fast one, and they're staying with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, it's actually really good for them. Ring of Honor right now has got a lot of more forward mobility, I really think, especially with Sinclair. Their financial future is definitely set for a long time, unlike, you know, maybe TNA Impact, but that's a different story for a different time. One of the cool things, actually, that came through the wire the other day was actually The WWE has broke down some of their towns they go to in different categories, category A, category B, category C, and it's based on attendance, when it turns out. Of course, a capital A is actually a minimum of 350,000, you know,
wow.
So actually, I don't know, pardon me, it was like 35, whatever, you know, it's 3,500, right?
Yes.
And the max is actually about 15 to 16, so it's actually kind of nice going through, because what they did was they averaged their house show attendance, their live show attendance, and pay-per-view attendance, of course. They broke down these cities into certain categories, and it was actually kind of interesting because there's a couple local cities. Minneapolis happens to be an A city, while Milwaukee ended up being a B city, which was actually kind of funny because Des Moines was actually a B city, too. I never would have guessed that. And a C city was Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about WWE actually breaking down cities like this? Do you think it's going to have a future impact on possible how they book towns? Or you think it's just one of those things like, let's just not worry about it?
If they're breaking these, you know, they're breaking them down for a reason, trying to figure out where they're going to get the best product for the best, you know. Obviously, when you have pay-per-views, that it's not like you're just going to try to find the best city to have your live events in. Simply just, you know, to be in that live city. It helps your TV product, obviously, tremendously. I mean, the Raw after WrestleMania is can't miss simply because of the fan base that attends that Raw event. I'm assuming that these could change, you know, if they were to go to Green Bay for a live show and they were, you know, just a house show and they were like, holy crap, this place is really hot. This is a really good fan base. Then that could maybe change. Like, maybe that could become a B city. Like, I'm sure that they're open to doing things like that. So it's not like you're pretty much set in stone, you know, for having a terrible audience for the past couple of years and now you're being labeled as a city. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a smart move business-wise on their part, not only to make sure they get the best from their live audience, but to make sure that their TV tapings and pay-per-view tapings are, you know, as good as possible with that live crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting move that they're doing, because I think it's very similar to what we see a lot with the ranking system for wrestling. You know, you're keeping tabs on, you know, who's doing what, how their win, loss, draw rate, you know, what they've been doing for title accomplishments. I kind of see that with this ranking system for different cities, because, you know, you're ranking, you know, Minneapolis is an A city, Milwaukee is a B city, so then you keep that in track, and then, it's, you know, for example, like Nick said, you go back to Milwaukee, and all of a sudden, you know, they just pack in, they raise it up to an A city, and, you know, maybe Minneapolis goes out of B city, and then you can kind of factor in, okay, what are we doing right here, what are we doing wrong here, because I'm assuming that they want to make every city they go to an A city, so they, you know, can, you know, pack the houses, make a great attendance number, and get as many people in there as possible. So I think it's a good way to keep tabs on what they're doing right in that area, what they're doing, what they can improve on. So I think it's a great move.
No, it's actually kind of interesting. You know, if I was able to attend a pay-per-view in Milwaukee, pay-per-view in Minneapolis, and a pay-per-view in Chicago. And I got to tell you guys, it's always packed any time. The live show experience, definitely. Most of the time, it's a house show here in town and stuff like that, which is, it's hit or miss. It all depends, really, because house shows, you never really know who's going to show up. A lot of times, a lot of guys are advertised, and a lot of guys don't show up.
Right.
But a lot of that happens because they get advertised in advance, guys get hurt, or guys can't make it because they're not on the house show circuit anymore. But it's one of those things. But going to, like, a Raw and stuff like that where, you know, you're guaranteed, like, TV exposure, you're going to see the big names and stuff like that. You're definitely going to see a higher attendance, even though, like, the last couple times I think we went, you definitely notice some seats tapered off and stuff like that. They don't open up all the seating like they do for a pay-per-view. So it's actually kind of interesting. And you always kind of wonder, though, it's like a lot of these numbers, is it just because certain cities have a better population base, you know? And I think that, and it, like, depends, too, with the population base. It's also the suburbs.
Right.
How many these families actually have the disposable income and stuff like that. It'll be actually kind of cool to actually see the rest of the numbers based on that alone, because I can tell you right now, I don't think Green Bay would actually have the populace to be an A city. That's just me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm glad they're actually a C city. That's pretty cool, because as you're going to hear later on in their interviews, Green Bay is definitely a historic town for WWE.
Yeah.
Especially on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about that. I know I read a recent report that, you know, somebody was at the last live SmackDown taping, and they were, they heard, you know, them pumping through audio, you know, like crowd audio.
Oh, they would actually, they would get, you know, fined and taken away draft picks.
Oh, yeah. Case. Okay, I knew you were going to make that NFL reference. I like
well,
that.
Yeah, I think only you and me got that one. So,
so right yeah, over my head.
That should be
surprising it caught in Faux Hawk.
Did they get caught in your – oh, he doesn't have the Faux Hawk today. That's why.
Oh, my God. It's not today.
Are you going to have the Faux Hawk on Friday?
Maybe.
Maybe. You might not.
Are you
debuting a new look on Friday?
We'll see.
Wow.
Disheveled AC Riley.
You heard it here first. AC Riley debuting a new look at ACW on Friday.
I said maybe, not actually.
You're hinting that you're going to do it. Are you going to wear a mask? He's wearing a mask.
Well, anyhow, coming up next, though, we're going to sit down and pick the mind of not one, not two, not three, but four individuals about their experiences on the national scene, not only in WWE, but also Ring of Honor.
Unlike LeBron James, we can actually make that promise true because we've already sat down and talked to him, so it's going to happen. It's not like we're going to, you know.
Promise seven
we're
going
to move. We're going to move to yep. Miami and say you're going to win seven rings. We're going to tell you right now. We've got four awesome interviews, and you're not going to want to miss them.
Well, all right. Tag me in, swag me out. Random girls, they ask me out. Nasty mouse, clean apartments until we fuck on the couch. I'ma go in, let me go in. Crazy time, good night, world. I don't mess with coke, but I woke up next to some white girl. I'm going harder than Sean and Dwayne Carter. And shit started an argument with everybody barging in. I'm stunting like my father. I go further and farther. You're hard on your daughter, but I'm hard in your daughter. Pardon me, I'm hard to see you half asleep. I have to be creating a masterpiece. Dressed in black, a master thief. Double O, no trouble though. Address me as David Bond. Waiting on my double-double. Who'd have thought it'd take this long? I kill the game like Bundy. We getting extra stunty. Every day feels like a Friday, but we fuck like it's a hump day. I don't even try like Sunday. You got me more stressed than Monday. I do it all in one day. I'm sure you'll do it someday. With a chick named Wednesday. She got me in the worst way. We kill the fucking game and call it Hearst Day. You heard me? And all my dudes be all about them trees like it's Earth Day. Celebrate cause it's somebody's birthday. I'm thirsty. Macchiato, macchiato, where my macchiato at? Hey, oh, thank you. What up, what up, what up, what up? Hey, what up, what up, what up, what up? Okay, I'm somewhere chilling in places you can't be at. Who is he? D Wizzy. Oh, man, I be that dude on the scene when I rap on the track. When I do it like this, can you do it like that? Can you flow like me? You can't flow like me. You can't go like me. You should grow like me. I'm Chuck Bass, means Chuck D. Fuck you, no, fuck me. Wait, I mean, fuck you. And she can fuck me. I'm chilling with some baddies. So you should be my caddy. Cause these Shooter McGavin dudes don't want me to be happy. She got tan skin, thick hips, dark hair, D cups. You D bags can suck on D's nuts. D up. I'm playing like a champion. Go hammer like a handyman. So hey, give me an Ambien. Or rush me in an ambulance. I'll be there with bells on. L will have an L in. And I'll be acting so selfish. I won't even turn my cell off. S-W-A-G, M-E-T-H-G, F-U-C-K-O-U-T, bitch, watch me get my spell on. Cause I'm in it, I'm on it, I'm gonna stop now. She keeps breathing heavy, says any minute, but not now. Hop down, turn around, grab a hold of them curtains now. And let me grab a hold and put that body on a gurney now. So much hype around these guys, but somehow they are boring stiff. Should I ain't being mean? I'm just being me. Yep, and that's the END. But if you want it slow, girl, we can take it slow. And if you want it fast, I'll give it to you fast. Cause I be staying and loving it, about to have fun again. While you are wondering, laying in the sun again with some friends and a wallet with money. And everything I do, they laugh like it's funny, but a crash like a dummy in the back. With a bunny, don't get mad, get money like sweet, like honey. Be the beat like I'm running, I can hear me coming in the near future, baby. It's not we make up, we make out, I'll make do. They tell me D, a lot of people don't know what to make of you. I'm Jay-Z, meets Jay Christ, meets Jay Leno, meets Jay Crew. Had a breakdown, we broke up, so now I break through. But if you want it slow, girl, we can take it slow. And if you want it fast, I'll give it to you fast.
Why do I love professional wrestling? I love the incredible action.
The awesome stories.
The larger-than-life characters.
I've been watching wrestling since I was a little kid. And believe me, That's been a long time.
It's good triumphing over evil.
It's having a hero to cheer for and a villain to boo.
It's something that can bring the whole family together.
So who does this stuff? Who is wrestling?
It's the wrestlers who chase their dreams to make it from the couch to the square circle. The ref! The managers!
And the commentators who add to the spectacle.
It's the fans who bring their energy,
their passion, and their love to the arenas.
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I? Who am I? Who am I?
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling. I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
I am wrestling.
Who am I? I am wrestling.
This movement is a worldwide movement. I Am Wrestling represents you, the wrestlers, you, the fans, and you, the wrestling company, worldwide. Wait no longer. Join now.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Everybody loves Nathan Gust.
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern independent wrestling.
It sounds stupid coming out of my mouth.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media, create your legacy.
You asked, and we delivered. It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
Joining us again in the Spotlight in Squared Circle is Matt Winchester, the Beer City Bruiser himself. Matt, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, it's going good. And, you know, Beer City Bruiser, everybody knows you, you know, by it. We saw it on Twitter. It was blowing up. You know, for people that may not know, you know, tell us about your experience working for Ring of Honor the past couple, or the past year.
Well, Ring of Honor's been amazing. It has been fantastic. I did the tryout camp last year, actually, and then they invited me back to do the Top Prospect Tournament in January. And what the Top Prospect Tournament is, in a tournament of future stars they're looking at. There's eight of us, and it goes through. You start in the first round, you go to the second round, and eventually you make it to the third round. I made it. I won my first match. And then I made it to the semifinals against Will Ferreira, and I ended up losing. But the experience was just amazing. Ever since the Top Prospect Tournament, I've wrestled for them in Milwaukee and in Chicago. And on April 25th, I'm going to be wrestling for Ring of Honor in Hopkins, Minnesota. So I'm excited.
You know, man, I'm actually kind of interested. We know you've been in the business double-digit years. You're coming into Ring of Honor. We talked to you before, and you kind of mentioned, you know, the idea of, you know, making sure you kind of, you know, keep your mouth shut and just, you know, keep your ears open. What kind of a humbling experience is that for a guy like you, you know, because normally when you're working around the indies here in Wisconsin, I mean, you're kind of like the big vet. You're the guy that everybody goes to for that advice. So what's it kind of like for you entering this new scene where you're back to square one and you're wanting to hear and you know, really experience everything you possibly can. What's that like for a guy that's been in the biz as long as you?
It's real refreshing, actually. I like coming, getting done with my matches, coming back. And Roderick Strong is the first one every time I come through the curtain. Him or Todd Sinclair are the first ones that watch my matches. And they'll right away pull me aside and go, hey, this was great, but here you need to work on this and this. And think about it if you do this. And then later on, you know, like this last couple times, Samoa Joe helped me out. You know, I had dinner with AJ and Frankie Kazarian, AJ Styles and Frankie Kazarian. They were giving me advice. It's not only is it humbling, but it's really refreshing. When I wrestle around here, I don't know if, you know, there's times where people, oh yeah, great, and then just kind of walk away. I want to learn. I want to be better. I believe that, you know, if you have a job that you love, like I do with wrestling, I want to be the best that I possibly can be. And in order for me to be the best I can possibly be, I need to learn almost everything there is about the trade. And learning from guys that have not only been in the business, maybe not as long as me, but they've done far more than I have, you know, AJ Styles going to TNA, going over to Japan. Roderick Strong, you know, he's Mr. Ring of Honor. He's been there, you know, since day one, every title that he's had. The Briscoe brothers, they've been there since day one. Those guys helping me out just makes me a better wrestler. And me being a better wrestler just makes Ring of Honor a better company.
Absolutely. I want to go back a little bit to the trial camp that you, Stacey Shadows, and Ian Gager did. You know, we've heard from a few guys that have done the WWE camps that it's very much that they go there, they just pair off with somebody, and they just work to basically three guys, but they're not going to give any crowd reaction. No, what was it like doing the Ring of Honor camp? What was that like? Was it similar to the WWE, or was it something completely different?
It was totally different. I've done WWE stuff, the tryouts before the shows and stuff, and it's like you said, there's a few guys watching you. I mean, the thing with WWE is you're always being watched, you're always being evaluated, the cameras are always on, you know, so you always got to be on your game. With the Ring of Honor camp, what I loved so much about it was, wasn't it? Yes, you're going there for a tryout, and you're going there to be evaluated, but they helped you too. You know, they were honest from your gimmick to the gear you were wearing. They would, they'd watch our matches that we had and they'd critique them. We had to then go over with Kevin Kelly and do promos. And he would help us with our promos, and it would be a TV promo. He'd say, you have 1 minute. Here are what your cues are. You need to say what you need to say in that minute, which is really good because a lot of guys don't get TV experience. You know, you don't know what the hard cam is. You don't know what roaming cameras are. And the camp, they taught you that, you know, and it was a lot of fun. Like, I've done a lot of camps in my career, and I think the Ring of Honor tryout camp was probably the best camp that I've ever done. And anybody that's looking to advance their career should really take a look at it. Maybe you don't get invited to the Top Prospect Tournament. Maybe you don't get looked at by Ring of Honor. Just going there, you're going to make yourself a better wrestler.
So the day when you get to Ring of Honor for a TV taping, what is it like? What can you expect if you're going to a TV taping?
It's a very long day sitting in your wrestling gear. You show up at 2 o'clock. When we did the Top Prospect, we all showed up. We got into our gear. We had to go take our promo pictures. They interviewed us. You found out who you were wrestling, so you could probably put your matches together. But they didn't tell you what was going on. You had to wait until they were done with their production meeting. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait. My first match is up in Nashville. I was the second match on the third TV taping. So I had to wait for the first two TV tapings to happen before I could actually have my match. Where, like, here, you know, an independent shows, you know, you have seven matches, six matches, and that's it. So you get to the building, you know what you're doing. You know you're on third. You go out, you're wrestling, you come back, you change. With the TV taping, it's you're changed, you're sitting, you're waiting. First episode happens, second episode happens, you know, and then you finally get to wrestle, you know. It was a lot of fun, though. Ring of Honor is going to be the best TV going on right now. And watching those first couple episodes of TV, they made me excited. Like, this should be amazing on TV. When we did Philadelphia, they filmed the semifinals and the finals the same night. So if we knew we were wrestling and then going over, we didn't have to wait as long. We just had to wait one TV taping instead of waiting a whole month. It went by a little bit faster. We got there at 2 o'clock, and then by the time the show was all said and done, we left the building about midnight. So I went back to the hotel room and crashed because I drove from Wisconsin to Nashville.
So one thing that we talked about a little bit too, as far as the booking, is that, you know, we see a lot of independent promotions. Is that you know, the promoter will kind of tell the wrestler what he has planned for them, you know, maybe for the upcoming year, maybe for just a couple months. Whereas Ring of Honor, it sounds like it's a little bit different story. And how do you feel about that reaction?
I like it. I like working on the fly. You know, I like I don't mind them just telling me, hey, you're going to wrestle this guy. You know, I like that. I kind of, you know, there's times where I want to know what I'm doing, future plans, but I know as far as Ring of Honor is concerned, you know, I'm a low man on totem pole. You know, I'm sure they're telling the Briscoes and Red Dragon stuff, everything they're doing for the next couple months. But me, I tell you, you're booked on this date. So I'm just happy to be booked. I'm happy to show up, find out what I got to do, put my match together, and go do what I have to do. You know, it's a lot of fun.
So you're blowing up on Twitter as the Beer City Bruiser, but Your experience doesn't stop there. You got some, you know, work as an extra for WWE. Kind of talk about what that experience was like. What did you really do for them?
With WWE, I've done a lot of things. When I lived my very first WWE experience was actually when I did the Simon Dean's debut. I was the fat guy that he pulled out of the crowd that he made fun of. I ended up shoving Simon Dean, and then he ended up, and then trashing his set, and then he ended up throwing me to the ground and stretching me out. It was surreal. I mean, that first time there, you know, you see all these guys you see on TV and you look up to. I met Vince McMahon my very first time. He was a very intimidating guy. He's a very nice guy, but he was very intimidating right off the bat. You know, it's like, holy shit, that's Vince McMahon right there.
Yeah.
You know, this guy could, like, break me. It was just fun. I've done matches for them. I've wrestled the Highlanders. I've wrestled Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. I've wrestled the Team Gemini. They were there for a little bit. Kevin Thorne and I actually became really good friends because when he was coming up with gimmicks and stuff, he'd have me get in the ring with him and roll around and stuff so they could see what worked and what didn't. I've been, you know, the dummy for Shawn Michaels to try stuff out with. I got to sit ringside while Undertaker put a match together, you know, and he used me as a dummy, which was really cool. I've done the security thing for them. I was actually in Green Bay security that broke up John Cena and Vince McMahon in the middle of a fight. Oh. And what was really cool about that was my mom and my grandmother were there in the crowd watching it live. So they got to see it live. And my grandma, she'd seen me wrestle on the independent level, but she'd never seen me on that big of a stage. And it was, she loved it, every single minute of it. So I've done pretty much everything with WWE. You know, I've done matches, I've had different agents. Michael Hayes loves me. I love Michael Hayes. He's a great guy.
Well, you got a ton of experience between the WWE and the Ring of Honor, Matt, but what's something that you consistently find yourself giving advice to the other guys in the independent locker room before we wrap things up?
The advice that I have is keep your eyes and ears open, keep your mouth shut. You know, you're not the greatest wrestler in the world. If you were, you'd be under contract with Vince McMahon, you know. Listen to what everybody's got to say. You know, take that advice. Just because a guy's telling you stuff you're doing wrong does not mean that he hates your gut. He's trying to help you make it better. The only way you get better is finding out what you need to work on. If an opportunity presents itself, take it. Don't look for an excuse not to take it. You know, I could have said, hey, I was in this business 14 going on 15 years. I don't need to do a Ring of Honor tryout. But where would I be? I'd be sitting at home doing nothing. I went and I did it. You know, that's how you get noticed. You have to make, you know, like Steve Queen always says, they'll show you the door. You're the leader. You got to kick it wide open. You know, Queen will show me the door for Ring of Honor. I'm the one that kicked it open. So those young guys, as long as they can take the critiques from everybody, recognize the opportunities they're given, and make something of it, I think they'll do just fine.
All right, cool. Well, we got to wrap things up. One final question. Where are we going to see the Beer City Bruiser next?
The Beer City Bruiser will see this Saturday. I'm up in WPW, wrestling at Baba Louie's in De Pere. And then April 25th, I'm in Hopkins, Minnesota for Ring of Honor. So then you can go on my Facebook page or the Beer City Bruiser's Facebook page, and you can see where I am. I'm booked pretty much solid till the end of August. So go check me out.
Awesome, Mr. Winchester. Thanks for coming on and sharing your experiences to the Gravel Talk universe.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the one-hour Tease Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
Well, on the phone now, we got GQ. Brother, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Hey, we're doing all right. So, you've got some experience. Last time we saw you on the main stage, it was WWE main event in a tag match. We got to ask you, were nerves going through your body when you were out there on the big stage?
You know,
No, not really, actually, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of people will get a little surprised when I answer that question like that. For whatever reason, every time I've been to WWE and had the privilege of being on TV and wrestling their guys, nerves never really kick in. I don't get nervous. It's kind of the feeling of I belong there. So, like, I don't really let the people get to me, you know, or anything like that. It's just I go in there and just do what I know what to do, you know, and just get the job done.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that you mentioned to us, because we thought that was your first booking with WWE, but you said it was actually our fourth. So can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing prior to the tag match with The Ascension?
Well, let's see. Back in September of 2012 was the first time I went. And did some work for WWE, and it was really cool. It's a different mentality over there than it would be in, like, the indie scene. You know, everybody's there to do their job. Everybody's there, you know, for the most part, they're having fun. I guess it depends, you know, who you ask, but, you know, everybody seems laid back, having fun. They're just concentrating on getting through the day and, going out there and performing. So, I had the privilege of meeting William Regal the first time I was there, and he was the guy that ran pretty much like the extras that were there for WWE. So Monday, you kind of just sit around, you know, talk about what you're going to do. Regal kind of, you know, gets a good feel for you and he explains what Tuesday's going to look like. You know, just sitting down with Regal for, you know, 2 hours was, you know, worth it, let alone, you know, getting in the ring. But because he's just a phenomenal guy, and he honestly just knows so much about the business. He's one of the smartest guys I probably ever had the privilege of talking to about wrestling. So it was really cool to actually sit down with him and talk. And then you know, Tuesday comes around, and first thing you do on Tuesday is you get the opportunity to wrestle in the ring against, you know, the other guys that are there with the same opportunity, and you just wrestle literally just in front of William Regal. And then at the end of it, he tells you, you know, he's very honest. He tells you if you suck or he tells you if you're good. You know, and I guess I was lucky enough where he really appreciated my work. He really liked the way that I moved in the ring, liked the way that I healed, liked the way that I babyfaced. Then I had an opportunity with Matt Stryker at the time, who was there, and got to cut promos and work on promos with Matt Stryker. And Stryker loved the way I cut promos. He loved the fact that I could speak another language. So that was really cool, because I think Matt Stryker's probably one of the best people, you know, cutting promos and all that stuff. He's amazing, and I think he doesn't get enough credit when it comes to promos and commentating and stuff like that. I think he's tremendous. So getting advice from him was, you know, amazing. And then after all that, then you gotta go in the production room and you're cutting promos in front of William Regal, Matt Stryker, Brooklyn Brawler. And that's kind of, I think that was probably the time where I was actually, if I was nervous, that was the time I was nervous. Just being in a closed room with just those guys looking at you and saying, hey, cut a promo on ice cream, you know, cut a promo on this, whatever the case may be. And that's what they were doing. You kind of have to, like, think on the fly. They liked everything I did. Stryker was very happy because of the advice that he did give me from a one-on-one time I used in the production room. The first time I was there, everything was great. You know, I got a lot of good critiques, a lot of good things that I learned. And then after that, it was like the ball kind of just started getting rolling. I went back in November. The first time was in September in Chicago. Second time was in November in Ohio. And that's when I actually got my first time on TV. I got to wrestle with Ryback. So that was kind of fun, I guess, doing a Saturday morning slam match with Ryback. And then after that, I got to go back in March. I think it was the Raw leading up to WrestleMania. I was there in Indianapolis. And then I kind of, like, the WWE train kind of stopped for a little bit, and I didn't know why, and I don't know why still, but it just stopped. I guess they stopped calling, and maybe I should have called more, who knows, but that's just the way wrestling works sometimes. And then recently, back in February, I got the opportunity to go back again in Ohio, and that's when you saw I did the match with the Ascension, got to work with them.
So, you know, it's a very cool experience being there. Like I said, nervous. I don't get nervous, even when I did my Ryback match. I think that I've been nervous one time, and that was the first time I was there in the production and cutting promos. After that, it was just kind of, I'm kind of at the mindset right now where I feel like I belong there. I feel like that I can be there. So, you know, it's things that I took away from that and bringing to the indies, I guess you can say, is, I don't know if you guys notice in my matches, but I try to work the camera a lot.
Right.
And that's kind of like a big thing in WWE, is the cameras. You know, and a lot of guys in the indies that haven't been through WWE yet, you know, kind of like have been told, like, oh, you got to work the people. Yes, you do, and absolutely, 100%. But in WWE, you know, they tell you, yeah, work the people, but don't, like, that's not your focus. Your focus is the camera. So I don't know if I can tell, because I see my own matches, and I can see my matches now where there's a lot of moments where I do certain moves to the cameras, and I make sure I run the ropes a certain way so we can catch the hard cam a certain way, you know. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've definitely took away from WWE, and I kind of try to incorporate that in my matches, is really working the camera.
Right, GQ, and I mean, we're kind of talking to you guys, getting some advice from you guys, and one thing I'm kind of picking up from you that I think is really important for people that are trying to be successful, not only getting to that level, but just on the indies in general, is just owning that ring. I mean, you can tell when you're watching a guy in the ring if they, you know, feel like they belong there. And I mean, you know, coming from you, you know, I mean, is that, would you say, I mean, that's really important to getting to that level, is just, instead of just being like, you know, I think I'm this good, like, knowing you're good enough to be in a ring and having guys like Regal watching your matches?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, a lot of people really mistake that when I make that statement, saying that I feel like I belong there and, you know, Regal liked me and stuff like that. I think they take it as me being cocky. I don't take it as being cocky. I think it's just me, like, owning my craft and knowing right. that, like, you know, what I can do, I can do. And, you know, Regal is the kind of guy, when he watches you perform in the ring and wrestle in the ring, he's literally watching everything you do. So if you're uncomfortable in that ring, like, Regal will tell. Like, he could tell just from the way you're circling, you know, your footwork and everything like that. So, like, being in that ring and, like, having the confidence and putting, like, and like you said, like, showing them that you own this ring, I mean, that all comes from just circling the ring. That all comes from just standing in there and the way you carry yourself. I think one of the things that really stood out in my match with the Ascension when I did that main event, Eric Freedom and myself were talking about it. It wasn't, you know, the moves that I took. It wasn't how I sold or anything like that. If you watched it, it's not that long. It's probably like 5 seconds. But if you watch that 5 seconds at the beginning of the match when that bell rings, you can see me in the ring. And what am I doing? Like, I'm pumping my fist. I'm not looking like a jobber, I guess you can say. I'm looking like I'm ready to fight. Like, I belong in this ring. I'm ready to go. You know what I mean? And then right. that was just, like, my posture and my kick. Like, you know, I wanted to make sure that I didn't look like, all right, you know, I'm going to get beat up, nervous. No, I wanted to show the confidence. I wanted to show, like, hey, I'm here to fight. You know, obviously, granted, the match went a completely different way, but, you know, for that split 5 seconds, like, if you really watch it, I think you can kind of tell that, like, my confidence and comfort level is there.
Right, man. I mean, it's almost like a job interview. You know, people always mistake that, you know, having that swagger for, you know, maybe cockiness, like you said, but at the same time, if you're walking in a job interview, you have to have some sort of level of arrogance, because you want that position. It's not like you're going to sit back and let somebody else take it. You need to show that you belong there and that you deserve that spot, and I think, you know, that's something that's very important, obviously, especially for somebody trying to make it in this business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a very thin line between, you know, confidence and cockiness, and do I cross that line? Sure. Like, there's times where I cross that line. Absolutely. Everybody crosses that
right.
line. You know what I mean? But those are just things that, like, it just comes with the nature of the beast, you know, per se. You know, you have a great match, and you're on cloud nine. Of course, you're gonna come off a little cocky about it. You know, you have a good experience at WWE. Yeah, you're really excited. You're going to come off a little cocky about it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, really, to be honest with you. I think if you carry yourself in a respectable manner, you know, and you you own your craft and you believe you're as good, then, like, yeah, like, be confident about your shit, you know what I mean? Be, own up to it. Like, if you're good and you think you're good, like, then own it, you know? Act like you're good, because it shows if you second-guess yourself. It shows if you are doubting that, oh, maybe I'm not, I don't belong here. Maybe I'm not as good as these guys. Well, it's going to show. Your body language will show. Like, your work in the ring will show. I've seen guys on the indies that are tremendous workers, great workers, like solid workers, and they go to WWE and they like shit the bed because they just don't think they belong there, or they just get too nervous about it. It's like, it's the only difference between doing what you do in the indies and doing it in WWE is that you're just doing it at WWE. There's nothing else different about it. They don't ask you to do anything special. Like, if anything, they tell you to downgrade your work and just tell more of a story than show a spot fest and a bunch of moves, you know? So I think that's the biggest advice I can probably give anybody, that if you get an opportunity to go there, be confident in yourself, because they're going to see that. They're going to see that, like, okay, this kid knows what he's doing. This kid can move in the ring. This kid's owning the ring. Everything he's doing is solid, good work, you know? If you doubt yourself, then it's going to show in the ring, and, you know, and who knows, that could be the one time where they're like, oh, he's the shit, don't ever call him again, and there goes your opportunity. You know, not saying that will ever happen, but you never know.
Well, we got to wrap things up here, but the final question, this is the toughest question we're going to ask you. What was your favorite thing from catering? What was your favorite thing from catering?
Oh, my God, that is the hardest question in the world, man. Like, I've been lucky enough to have catering there for four different times, and every time that something's always different. Mm-hmm. But man, like, the food is phenomenal, like, amazing. But I think the one thing is, like, my little, cheat is that chocolate cake, man. For whatever reason, they have this chocolate, like, double chocolate cake there, and it's literally, like, the best thing I've ever had in my life. It's so good. It's so good.
Well, GQ, thanks for coming on, man, and sharing your experiences. You know, obviously great, in my opinion, really good advice, you know, something that we haven't actually heard yet. So, hey, man, thanks for coming on and sharing your stuff with WWE.
Hey, but guys, I appreciate it anytime, man.
It's not about the shoes. It's about knowing where you're going. Not forgetting where you started. It's about having the courage to fail. Not breaking when you're broken. Taking everything you've been given and making something better. It's about work before glory. And what's inside of you is doing what they say you can't. It's not about the shoes. It's about what you do in them. It's about being who you were born to be.
All right, Rennie. So 2013, you had the two tryouts with the WWE, Monday and Thursday. So tell us a little bit about what that experience was about.
First off, I liked how you said Monday and Thursday, although it's Monday and Tuesday, but you're on the WWE yep. schedule, so good work. The best experience in my life, man. I remember getting the phone call from Stanford, and I saw it, and that's a funny story too. As far as the phone call, I lost my phone in the water the night before, and my phone was shot. So I turned my phone on like 2 days later, and saw I had a voicemail from Stanford, Connecticut. I listened to it, and I marked out in my kitchen. It was unbelievable. So the experience itself, man, until you actually do something like that, you always dream of what is it like in WWE? What's the backstage area like? The experience was hands down the coolest thing that I've ever done in my entire life, not just as a professional wrestler, but in my entire life. You walk in and you are just surrounded by the guys that you either grow up watching. I mean, some of the guys were still there, or the guys that you would watch on Monday and, as you said, Thursday, you know, on TV. And it's one of those things. It's a surreal moment at first. I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not really starstruck in that situation, but I got a chance to kind of breathe in and say, hey, I've been working my entire life for this moment. So extremely special, extremely grateful for it, and something that I will never forget.
It's almost got to give you some clarity at that some point too, because it's like you said, it's like I've been working my whole life for this, and then to get to that stage, you're like, I must be doing something right if I got this phone. Because, you know, a lot of guys don't ever get that phone call when they, you know, set out for that journey. So to be able to, you know, look at your phone and be like, oh my gosh, hopefully this isn't a telemarketer. This is awesome news. Like, that must have been just the craziest feeling ever. Just, I guess, to know that your accomplishments were being recognized by really the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that matters.
Yeah, it's the biggest case of reaffirmation that you can ask for in this business. So there's one thing when the crowd erupts at the finish or the guys in the backstage area say, great match, man, when half of them probably don't even watch it. But when you get that call from WWE, from Stamford, Connecticut, asking you to come in on Monday and Tuesday to help out with the show and also to do a tryout with William Regal, that's the ultimate reaffirmation that you ask for. It's like, hey, I'm doing something right. Either I have a good look or a good gimmick or I'm a good worker. And, you know, one of those three at least I had, and I got the call to go in and do it. It was unbelievable.
So I guess I don't know how many people were actually watching your tryout match, but knowing that you had Regal watching, so, I mean, obviously it was a big deal. I guess was just having the eyes of William Regal watching your match, you know, I guess, you know, quote unquote, bigger than I guess any other audience you'd ever worked in front of before?
The biggest, smallest audience I've ever been in front of before, because my actual match itself happened at the Target Center in Minneapolis. So there's 15,000 empty seats around the ring. There is William Regal, there's the Road Dogg, the Usos, Jason Albert. Ricardo Rodriguez was my referee. I mean, there were other guys that were stretching out outside the ring, other, you know, pro wrestlers or WWE wrestlers, Fandango, Kofi. I mean, they were all just hanging out, watching, you know, and for them, good for them. It's actually pretty cool because if they see one of us do something awesome, they're going to steal it, and why not? I mean, I would too. So, but it was stressful because it's not like working an indie show where you have a crowd to feed off of. There's no cheers from these guys. They're watching intentively, trying to figure out, you know, what you're good at or, and if you can make it in that business. So you do a spot, and normally you'd expect the crowd to cheer for that spot because I was the babyface in my tryout match, and there's dead silence. It's really, really, really weird. I mean, it's – and William even told us beforehand, he goes, I think this is going to be the hardest thing that you guys ever have to do, and I'm glad I never had to do it because it's not going to be fun. And it wasn't that fun, to be honest with you, because there's a couple things too. You look at the normal independent-sized ring, it's an 18 by 18. WWE uses a 20 by 20. That's an extra step and a half. It kind of throws things off. So you get a chance to go in the ring a little bit beforehand and get used to running the ropes. But me being a shorter guy, it was a little transition for me to try to get used to that extra, you know, 2 feet from rope to rope.
So was it the weirdest job interview you've ever had in your life?
Yeah, I would say, you know, job interviews I normally can kill if it's a shoot gig. The WWE job interview I wish I would have killed, but it was just, you know, I killed the promo part. That part I killed, that was for sure. The actual match part, other than the fact that I was 5'8", the match itself, I'll be straightly honest with you guys, it was the shits. It was terrible. What I should have done is, the guy I was wrestling, and this is part of the problem with WWE, the guy I was wrestling has only been wrestling for 6 months, and he didn't look anything like a pro wrestler. And me, I should have told him that I was going to be the heel in the match, but I know I'm a really good babyface because I had to look for it, so I said I'll be the babyface. I've never met this guy in my life, mind you. I met him on Monday. On Tuesday, we were having the match. So it's just little things like that. So very stressful, especially given the fact that there was no research I had on this guy. I don't know what he does. I don't know how good he is or whatever it might be. And then I just had to work with what I had on Tuesday.
That does sound like a really weird, you know, experience to say the least.
It's weird, yeah. Because the two guys that I went with was Craven Knight and Ari Daivari, and those two have been working together consistently for the last, you know, mm-hmm. 5-6 years, and I've been working with them too. Those two got paired up or decided to go together, and I went with the odd man out. So it was that. But it is what it is, man.
So as far as this guy that you got to do the trial match with, did you guys get any? You know, even though you didn't get a lot of time to research him before, obviously, did you get to at least talk with him for a little bit? You're like, hey, what do you kind of do? You know, how long have you been doing this, et cetera, kind of? Or was it pretty much you and you go right now?
Nope, we found out on Monday, and then on Tuesday we were going to work. So I got his phone number, and I had to drive back from Des Moines, Iowa, back up to Minneapolis after Monday Night Raw. So left the Wells Fargo Arena probably like 10:30, 11 o'clock. Got back into Minneapolis around 2:34, 3 o'clock in the morning, and the entire time, and I don't condone this, don't text and drive, but I was so damn nervous. I'm texting this guy saying, here's what we're going to do tomorrow, this, this, and this, and this, and I don't like to plan out a lot of stuff in my matches. I don't think that's how you're supposed to be a pro wrestler, but I planned out certain spots I wanted to get to because we don't have to worry about crowd reaction in this match. It's really what's the match going to be. And I'm fortunate because he was as green as he was, and because I was the baby face, I couldn't really take control from my stance. I mean, the heel's job is always to take control of the match. Some of the stuff didn't go as I envisioned, If I would have been with a Craven or an Aria, it probably would have been just fine. But so I had that, you know, a little bit to talk with them. But other than that, not a ton, man. That was kind of a one-night stand type thing with them.
So you mentioned, too, that there was not really a lot of crowd reaction because, I mean, in front of everybody that you were trying out in front of, they weren't going to react either way. So basically, you know, we see that a lot in indie wrestling is that if you ignore the crowd, I mean, then the crowd dies and it's just an awkward match. So, I mean, like, for you knowing that they weren't going to react either which way, you know, did you catch yourself just on instinct trying to pop the crowd and realizing that no one was going to react?
Come on, let's go!
No, not at all. And the reason why is William told us before on Monday, he said that in this company, on the events that are televised, ignore the crowd. Basically, that the crowd doesn't matter for the most part. It's you're making love to that camera because the television audience is the one that you're going to go to. So, you know, if you ever get those tickets on the hard cam side or across from the hard cam, I mean, the wrestlers' backs are to you pretty much the entire night, and there's a reason for that. Most wrestlers don't solicit a response from a crowd on a television taping. On a live event, totally different. But it was really for us, the main thing was making sure you're working that hard cam, making sure if you take a spot and you're having pain show on my face, that you are looking directly at that hard cam. And that's things that they don't teach you on the indie scene. And a lot of indie promotions don't have hard cams. And those are just things that ever since I came back from WWE after that tryout, those are things that I worked on a consistent basis on indie shows is, where's that hard cam? Make love to that hard cam. Sorry, crowd. Don't care too much about you. Although I want you to pop, I really want to make sure that the people on that camera can see exactly the type of pain or type of suffering that I'm in.
So really quick, before we wrap up the segment, Rennie, so as far as you talk about making love to the hard cam, you know, an indie show,
Make love.
So other than that, what are some things that you catch yourself kind of giving advice to the guys in the back at indie shows? Like, if, for example, with Primetime Wrestling, that you say, hey, this is something that, you know, William Regal taught me, or this is what da-da-da taught me at my tryout, and this is what I'm going to share to you. What's another common theme that you catch yourself sharing the wisdom of?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a couple things. I mean, just similar small things like moves, like a headlock. When you have a headlock on somebody, they will have their palm of their left hand facing their face. And if you guys can kind of do this while you're sitting there, and that's how they lock their hands. It's something like this. You want to turn your hand around to make sure that you have the back part of your hand facing your face, because the purpose of a headlock, when you have them in that, is to drive that forearm bone into their cheek. On the other part of your arm, underneath, that's all skin and muscle, and there's no bone there, so that's a softer surface. You don't want that. Basically, William said that when you're wrestling, although pro wrestling is a scripted sport, we want to go ahead and, you know, suspend their belief that it's not, you know, that we don't want to sit there and make it look fake. So envision yourself in a real fight. If somebody punches you in the face, what's going to happen? You know, that's the reaction that you need to have. If somebody is beating you up, are you just going to lay there and let them beat you up, or are you going to fight back because you don't want to get your ass kicked? Little things like that. And then probably the biggest thing, because I'm a promo guy, I loved cutting promos. I've always felt I was good at them, and I did do a really, really, really good job on my promo for William and for the guy down from the NXT. But don't get so caught up in a typical wrestling promo. And there are so many guys in any scene that'll be like, let me tell you something, or, you know, they'll do the typical, this, you know, tonight I'm going to beat your ass and I'm going to take your title, and just this tough guy act, and they're all the same. You know, find a difference in what you can do with your promo. Look, case in point, look at Bray Wyatt on WWE TV. Completely different. He's over, and there's a reason for that. So that's the biggest thing that I try to work on my promo skills, try to do things differently. And I didn't want to be that typical, I'm going to fight you tonight and I'm going to beat you up, you know, very, very, very typical promo that we see at every indie show you go to. And that'd be my biggest advice to give anybody that's in the business or trying to get into business is cut promos on yourself in the mirror in the bathroom. I used to cut promos on Subway sandwiches. I mean, there's things that you can do like that aren't wrestling related that make you a better talker. And that's in this business. I think that if you look good and you have a good look and you're in the gym and you're working out, your wrestling can be the third most important thing, to be completely honest with you. It's your look, your charisma, your promo skills, and then your wrestling comes later, because that is the one thing that WWE can teach you is how to be a wrestler. They can't teach charisma, and promo skills are extremely hard to teach people.
That's definitely, I think, one of the best, you know, pieces of advice that we've maybe even ever heard here. Rennie, hey, thanks for coming on and sharing your wisdom with your experience with WWE, man.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast, every Tuesday.
on iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, PencilPodcast.com.
Joining us now is Mike Mercury of 3TW, a guy that has a lot of experience with WWE in the backstage perspective. And Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be on.
So we were talking a little bit with some guys about their experience inside the ring, but like I mentioned, you have a different perspective with the WWE. So can you tell us a little bit about what exactly you were doing with World Wrestling Entertainment?
Sure. There was a 2-year period where I had the privilege of doing some talent liaison work through, you know, some of my friends that were working with the company. I got some referrals, and basically when they were making their Midwest loops to do Midwest TV, be it in Green Bay, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Chicago, I think there was some, like, an Iowa taping and possibly even Indianapolis, I got the opportunity to pick some of the local and extra talent. And then, you know, WWE has had a pattern where they would often bring in sometimes just like four guys for their first, like four individuals to basically get like some type of a potential tryout, or they would be the extras in the event of, in the event of their third programming where they would show, you know, squash matches and things like that. You know, and that's where, you know, I had an opportunity. I some of the guys I got to pick were like Thorolf Marius, you know, who's now formerly of the Wyatt family, and doing his singles run, probably the most you know, the most relevant guy that was able to parlay that opportunity into a job and a career. But even some of the other guys, that some of the indie guys that had worked for me, ended up getting contracts. Ego Fantastico, Keith Walker, and such. And then they had stints down in Georgia when WWE had the Deep South developmental territory.
That's really interesting, you know, Mike, and you're kind of coming from a different perspective. I mean, we've had a couple other guys on so far that have really, you know, showed us kind of the ways behind, you know, as far as working in the ring. You're kind of a guy that's, you know, been able to work with them as far as, you know, referencing talent, things like that. So how did that relationship really start?
You know, I guess through my friends. You know, I had Ken Anderson was under contract at the time, along with Sean Daivari. But I want to say it, the very first time it happened, Daivari was recently called up to the main roster. Ken was actually in OVW, and through Daivari, I got a phone call saying, "Hey, here's a heads up. You know, you're going to get a call asking you about some guys, you know, to give some names up and you know, let them know what you think." And the former Simon Dean, Supernova, Mike Busey, I think his real name is, was the first one to contact me. And I did just that. They needed like six extra guys just for extra talent. And so I gave them a list of six. And then the very next time they were in the Midwest, Ken was up on the main roster doing Mr. Kennedy. And I got a phone call, I believe that time, from Tommy Dreamer. They needed like 12 or 15 locals, you know, and a lot of times when they use locals, there's, you'll see, when there's a plethora of security guards. I think the first time was a Raw taping in Green Bay, which was on the heels of Kane and Edge fighting over Lita. And this was kind of the historic Raw that had Paul Heyman, Eric Bischoff, and Vince McMahon in the ring at the same time. And that was also the night CM Punk had his tryout match for WWE, and he wrestled Matt Capitelli in a dark match and then ended up getting signed about a month later. So
So that was a pretty cool historic night to be a part of.
So when you're coming up with these guys' names and stuff like that to give them, what were you looking for with these talents to be like, I think this guy would be perfect for this role? Was it just kind of like give the guy a break, or was it like, man, I really think he actually could do it?
Well, I guess basically I had kind of one foot out of the business at that time. We were doing Mercury One Wrestling on an indie level, running, you know, like two shows every 2 months kind of thing. And basically I picked the best Midwest guys that, you know, would represent me well, so that way I would get asked again, you know. I know there was criteria the first time. I believe Tommy Dreamer had said, you know, they have to have short hair. You can't have anybody with long hair. And I remember Brandon Hayes of Fond du Lac at that time had long hair and was really upset and devastated that, you know, I didn't put his name up. And I said, well, dude, you didn't fit the criteria. And he's like, I would cut my hair for that, you know. You know, but it is what it is. They ask for a number of guys, and then I'd give them that many people.
So one thing, again, we're kind of getting around to the point that, you know, you have a different perspective than a lot of the wrestlers who have been in the ring, and we've had, you know, time to talk with the big names that, you know, give them advice about, you know, what makes for good national TV and all that. You know, from your perspective, being behind the scenes, what were some things that, you know, for example, Tommy Dreamer or Simon Dean or anybody of the like from the WWE, you know, were they feeding you any advice that you could take home and think, wow, I didn't even think about it in that perspective?
I would say probably what I did was, you know, when you'd have an agent is assigned to every match, you know, and you try to kind of listen in on what all those nuggets of wisdom were doing, and Dean Malenko was an agent, and he had to agent a match between Shelton Benjamin and somebody else, and they were going to do some hardcore stuff, and he was picking Paul Heyman's brain, mm-hmm. and Paul Heyman was kind of funny. Because he was just like, no, it was just organic. We didn't plan that out. And he's like, Paul, tell me about in ECW. Like, how did you decide like what weapon you were going to stick under the ring? And Paul was just like, no, we didn't decide anything. We just whatever somebody brought to the show, the guys grabbed it out of their hands from the front row. That was all organic. That wasn't premeditated. When a guy got hit in the head with a Nintendo, that's because a fan brought a Nintendo to the ring. It's not like, you know, one of the wrestlers dreamed it up or something. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, what I took from it was when you see some of the differences, you know, when with a big company like that and compare it to indie wrestling, like you'll see the biggest name guys, you'll see John Cena having lunch with three cameramen, you know, and talking to him and carrying a conversation. And, you know, from some of the other guys that I've had conversations with, that's so crucial, and that there's such a team atmosphere in that regard, where sometimes on an indie show, you'll see an indie wrestler that hasn't accomplished a whole lot will kind of big time the rest of the locker room, or sometimes they big time the staff. And there's so much that goes into a show on any level, from a production aspect of sound and lights and cues and things like that, that those guys can get taken for granted. And it was pretty cool to see the biggest names in the business showing respect to guys that you or I have no idea who they are, but that camera guy, the way they can shoot them and the little kind of tidbits of advice they can say, you know, if you stand over here, I can get a better shot of you than if you stand over there. You know, that's the stuff that kind of interaction is priceless, and that's why WWE looks so much better you know, as a television product than anything else.
Absolutely. And then, you know, from going from the advice that you get from the big names, you know, what's some things that you give to the independent talent here in the Midwest scene and all over at the independent shows? What are some things that you notice that you're commonly given advice about?
It's still an aesthetic business. You gotta look like you belong. And when you look at just the indie shows in this area and you see a guy like Silas Young on it, he's naturally a step ahead of everybody else. He's a cut above everybody else. Like, you know, if you're gonna get in the wrestling business, you need to invest in yourself so you look the look, you know. And, you know, not everybody wins the genetic lottery and they end up 6'5", cut out of granite. You know, you can be 5'10", but you need to be in shape, you need to be tan, you know, you need to have some slick-looking gear. So when a fan sees you in that ring or out of the ring after the show, before the show, you look like you belong. I think that hurts the business when, you know, there's wrestling matches and three matches in a row feature pale guys with no looks.
Did you have catering when you were there?
Oh, shit.
Oh, dude, you gotta, like, yeah. When I was back there, I wasn't an active wrestler, so fuck yeah, I'd eat all day.
What was your favorite?
Probably the chicken breasts.
Okay.
Like, prime. Milwaukee had the best catering. I got to partake in WWE catering in Minneapolis, Green Bay, Milwaukee. I'd say Milwaukee probably had the best catering.
That's what Matt Winchester said, too. He said,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
The
now, is Bradley that Center. Just a matter of, like, each place? Because I think we've had the food at, like, the Target Center and stuff like that, which is good food, but, like, the Bradley Center takes care of their own thing, or do they actually have people they kind of, like, license out for the food?
No, there's a staff on hand that they keep everything stocked, so they have... They have, like, coolers with sodas. They have coffee going, you know, bottled water, whatever you want, they pretty much have it. And then there's things you see backstage that are kind of neat, like Downtown Bruno shows up, like, halfway through a Raw taping with, like, six bags of Arby's. And it's for the guys in the gorilla and the truck and stuff like that. So that, I'm like those guys that you're eating right now, like, that's crazy. But that's, I suppose, awesome. Like, they have an 8 since 2 o'clock. So.
Yeah, definitely. And plus, you know, it's like dinner time at that point in time, too. You're like, I want Arby's. You got to get the sandwich, you know?
Yep. One of the, and it's just some of the interactions. Like there was a time where Sergeant Slaughter was, like, looked lost almost. And Vince walks by and JBL grabs Vince's arm and he goes, Vince, what does Sarge do for us? and Vince kind of turns and he looks at him and he just chuckles and he's like, well, if I found out, we'd probably have to fire him. I'm walking. It's just like that's kind of cool, you know.
Right, Mike, and you know, before we let you go, I believe there was something that you kind of wanted to say on our show, if you wouldn't mind elaborating on that.
You bet. Triple Threat Wrestling, 3TW, just signed the paperwork this weekend, and Friday, July 17th at 141 Raceway out in Mirabel, Wisconsin, you'll see the biggest independent wrestling show of the summer. There'll be six big matches before the races kick off that night at 141 Raceway. So there'll be more details to come. Just follow or look up 3TW Wrestling on Facebook or follow 3T Wrestling on Twitter.
3TW, July 17th. Thanks for coming on, Mike Mercury, and sharing your experiences with WWE.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Hey, Dave, what do you get when an atheist and a Christian start a podcast?
I don't know, Ken. What do you get when a Christian and an atheist start a podcast?
I don't know. You're the frickin' comedian. I figured you'd have some kind of joke or something.
Right. Hi, I'm David Vox Mullen.
And I'm Mary!
Mr. Anderson.
Seriously?
Wait for it. Just wait for it. Anderson.
And we're the hosts of Push the Button on the DVM Podcast Empire.
It's a show where we discuss religion, politics, and sex. All that stuff that we're not supposed to talk about.
I am a Christian.
And I'm an ordained minister with the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
I think that's code for he's an atheist.
And together, we tackle any and every hot-button issue that the world is scared to talk about.
Yeah, we're not afraid of the truth.
Yeah, we're not afraid to piss people off.
We're not afraid to push the button.
So find us on iTunes.
Or simply visit us online at dvmpe.com. And God willing, you'll come back for more.
Yeah, God willing. You took the words right out of my mouth, Dave.
Well, guys, you know, obviously just got done talking to four, you know, great minds of the business. And the best part about that was if you actually sat down and listened to that and those entire interviews, you learn something new from each guy, and I think that's what's really important about today's episode or tonight's episode, whenever you're listening, is the idea that, you know, not only are we still learning about the indie circuit, but now we're trying to almost, you know, find ways to help guys reach that next level. And or if you're just curious about knowing what it's like at that next level, you could definitely have heard that, you know, here at Grapple Talk.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you were paying attention to all the interviews, you know, you'd notice a lot of common themes that that our four guests shared. A lot of it was
catering.
Catering. Yeah. Catering, that was a theme, that they have great catering. We also learned, you know, pay attention to the camera, focus on that, which we're starting to see a lot, actually, but I think a lot of that is being passed down from those guys that have had that experience, and, you know, we're seeing that to the guys that haven't made it quite yet. But that's a good thing, because that means that, you know, that knowledge is being passed on. And then, like GQ said, act like you own the ring, and, you know, being confident in there, and, you know, don't for a second think, oh, maybe I don't belong in here, because then that just is the avalanche for disaster.
Yeah, definitely. Have confidence and pride in your abilities. There's Absolutely. A reason why you're there.
Exactly. And there's probably a reason why you're still listening, because we got tape study right now.
Be kind, rewind. Tape study.
All right, guys, we are going to go to All Japan Pro Wrestling, May 5th, 1992. It's one of Dave Meltzer's five-star classics, and it's for the All-Asia Tag Team Championships as Kobashi and Kakura take on the Cam Ann Express, which was Doug Furnace, and I believe that's Dan Kofat. This is a great match, guys. The crowd in this one makes it. You talk about, like, a Japanese crowd, usually you think, oh, man, these guys.
Sit on your hands.
No, these guys were like, I want to see the Cam Ann Connection get their fucking ass. And it was great. It's a good 22 minutes of just hard-hitting, physical, yet very easy to follow psychology in this match. You're not going to want to miss it. It was 1992's Match of the Year for the Observer. Go watch it. We'll put the link on Facebook. We'll put it on Twitter as well. I had a blast watching this match last night while eating pizza. I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, man, why have I never seen this match? Because it made me really, really love all four of these competitors.
You know, our Facebook page isn't only becoming a place to go when you want to know where shows are at. It's actually becoming a little library of matches that you can, you know, scroll through our feed and be like, oh, look at this match. Oh, look at this match. So if you're ever in a wrestling mood and you want to see some matches that you probably aren't going to see on the main circuit, up our Facebook page.
Yeah, definitely. We're always looking for more matches, too. So if there's any suggestions you guys actually have, feel free to tell us, because we like to watch wrestling.
Before we go, actually, guys, I want to make sure that we send a shout-out to Mario Crivello. Just had his, you know, had a kid.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Proud Papa.
Proud Papa. Papa Mario. Without a mustache. He doesn't have a mustache anymore.
Boy, he had, like, this beard thing
going on. He had a little bit of a little bit of a scruff this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So he's bringing it back.
Well, I guess you can do that when you're
and
a
also,
papa.
Like, this is a pretty cool news. I don't know if you guys actually follow Tommaso Ciampa on the social medias or anything like that. He's actually going on a tour of Europe here coming up this summer. Yeah, he's going to be wrestling for Progress Pro Wrestling and WXW in Germany.
I know, yeah, we've talked about
Progress
before.
Which is
going to
be really cool because WXW is also right up his alley when it comes to his style, and I think a lot of it, man, the guy got some really good opportunities the last couple of weeks, especially leaving Ring of Honor. He's really opening up his bookings and going around the world.
It's awesome.
I think it's only a matter of time before maybe he hits even Japan.
That'd be awesome. That's really cool.
Definitely.
Ace Riley, closing comments.
Well, you know, we're talking a lot about a lot of accomplishments, a lot of celebrating a new life, but of course, you know, we have to remember those that are not here anymore. You know, so this past weekend, there was the Sean Weber Memorial, you know, and I actually got to visit the headstone, and that was a really moving piece because, you know, here's a kid that was a month away from being 11, and he was taken way too soon. But, I mean, it was great to see everybody come together and, you know, honor his memory and, you know, do what he loved to do, you know, go to these shows. Raised $2,300 for him, and that was a great time. And then, unfortunately, just this week, we saw that Kathy Carlson, Minnesota Wrestling's big sister, she passed away. And, you know, seeing a lot of Minnesota guys, you know, from various promotions, you know, even if they don't necessarily agree with how other promotions are booked, you know, they agreed on one thing, that this, you know, this outstanding fan in the wrestling business is gone, and she will be greatly missed. So, you know, something to think about, you know, just, you know, cherish the life, you know, whether it's a fan or, you know, a coworker or anything like that, you know, don't be, just make sure that nothing is left unsaid.
All right.
Is everything left unsaid for this episode?
I think a lot of stuff has been said, and I don't think there's anything left unsaid unless you guys have something you want to say.
That's it for episode number 70. Thanks for joining us for 70 episodes, or if you joined halfway through, thanks for that as well. My name is Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Rude, and AC Riley. We love having you, and hopefully you love having us. Stay classy.
Thanks for joining Grapple Talk.
That's the bottom line.
Because right. Jesse Von Ruden said so.
No, not at all.
Nice.
Oh. Yep, gimmick steal.
Keeping you up to date on the Midwestern independent wrestling.
Look at us.
Stop doing that Emma thing, dude. I hate that.
Hey, come on. So I'm not stealing your pen.
That's so dumb.
Nice. I see what he did there.
What happened?
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.